Hi, this is Nadine Dietz, host of CMO Moves. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thanks so much for stopping by today and to give you a quick overview on what to expect. CMO Moves is all about game-changing leaders, their incredible journeys, the moves that they've made, and most importantly, their personal stories of how they got to be the leaders of some of the world's most exciting brands. I hope you'll enjoy their stories as much as I do and take away a few tips and some inspiration for your day. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to CMO Moves. Today I am with Musa Tariq, who is the former chief brand officer of Ford. Musa, hi and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. Very excited to be here.
I'm so excited you are here too. And I can't help but chuckle a little bit because I'm staring at you across the studio and this is the very first time that I'm actually recording in a legitimate studio, which we're at Westwood One, Cumulus Radio. And you complained about my audio quality. You said, Nadine, you got to do something about your audio quality. Well, voila, here you go.
It's positive feedback, I thought.
Yes, it was.
And now you've put me in this huge studio and I feel really nervous all of a sudden.
Hey, you know what? Me too, bud. So let's do this together. I'm wearing headphones that weigh more than my head. But this is cool. Super cool.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too. So let's jump in. Everyone's wondering, what are you doing? You left Ford and now you're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I'm probably going through a really interesting transition in life. And it is fascinating, actually, how many people are curious about what I'm doing. I'm getting phone calls about, hey, Musa, what are you doing next? Or even just taking them through this process I'm going in. I left Ford about a month ago and, you know, it's the first time in my life where I've actually taken a minute out to think about what I want to do next. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate enough to go from one job to another and always been in a situation where the call has come from a headhunter and, you know, I love my work so much. I've always finished on a Friday at somewhere and started somewhere else on a Monday. Mm-hmm. So I've never literally taken this time out and I just wanted to focus on looking at every single opportunity out there. And I think we're living in such an incredible time right now where there are incredible marketers, you know, Jonathan Mendenhall, Emmanuel, like saying these guys are like amazing at what they do and people I really look up to who are now actually deciding to leave marketing and do their own things. And so what I wanted to do was just focus on the white space. And there was a guy on my team at the very beginning of this year, when I asked him what his New Year's resolution was, he said it's to focus on the white space. Mm. And I said, what does that mean? And there was a big whiteboard in my office and he drew a massive black dot on the whiteboard. And he said, if I told you to write about this whiteboard right now, the first thing you would do is focus and write about the black dot rather than the 98% of white space around it. And so what I've been doing is just speaking to people and really thinking about what, you know, there are obviously the marketing roles out there, but what else is out there? And it's interesting. It's there's so much opportunity for people who are looking for branding help, for people who are looking for communication help, be it in politics, be it in traditional companies, or there's celebrities who are looking for that help and how they can start working with brands. And, you know, it's interesting. And I'm just learning. I'm trying to do things that I wouldn't normally do. I'm taking pottery classes,
ooh,
which is really nice. And I'm just learning as much as I physically possibly can and having conversations. And what's fascinating is actually the conversations I'm having tend to be so much more different from when you're in a role already because people label you as X.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're just not having conversations about a job or anyone and you're sitting down with people, the conversation tends to go off in lots of different directions, which has been really interesting.
Okay, so fascinating. I love this whiteboard with the black dot because you're right. People tend to fixate on what they see,
mm-hmm,
instead of what they don't see. So as you're going through this journey, you were describing to me before that you're trying a bunch of different things. And now again, you just told me about pottery,
yep,
which is cool. I'm not sure where that fits into your master plan, but like what are there specific things you're seeking out to experience?
Yeah, wow. What an amazing platform to be able to share my future vision and dream of. I think it's not as clear as I'd like it to be at the moment. I do know that I think this is the most interesting and fascinating time to be a marketer ever. During my last couple of months at Ford, I was really curious and interested in learning about kind of marketing organization of the future. And I spoke to so many CMOs, many of them who have already been on this show already, about their marketing organization. And it was fascinating that not one of their organizations look the same. Their strategies are different. And, you know, I have a very clear vision now on what I think the future of marketing looks like. Mm-hmm. And I really want to find a company where I can go and kind of fulfill that vision, really. I'm different from a lot of the marketeers, right? My Ford job was my first C-level role. Mm-hmm. And I was only there a year, so I'm very conscious that I haven't kind of made my mark at that level. And it's something that I really want to try and achieve. So I need to still prove myself. And since I'm even fortunate enough to be on this show amongst some of my peers who are like far more successful and incredible people. But, you know, I'm at that point now where I just kind of want to make sure that I still can prove myself at that level. And then I think that the future of marketing is unknown, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to try and solve that.
So, wow. Okay. So I'm so tempted, and I'm probably just going to do it. I'm going to ask you what you think the future of marketing looks like if you're ready to share, because so many people are going to want to know.
I knew as I was saying that you were going to ask that question. And here's the thing is that marketing has become so bespoke to, it's so hard to answer this question in a way that makes sense, particularly given I know what your audience is like. I think that marketing is at a point where in big companies, it's lost its North Star. I think the CMO role today is tougher and harder than it's ever been before because the scope of that role has grown, right? Mm-hmm. And as you know this, particularly from speaking to so many CMOs, every single one of their jobs differs. I still believe that the role of a CMO and its main focus should be the connection between brand and consumer, right? Mm-hmm. And that might be at the product level, it might be at the communications level. And what I don't think that we've achieved or got to a point of is that perfect intersection of one-to-one communication and big moments. I think we try and straddle this middle ground. I still think that there's huge potential. We've been talking about one-to-one communication from forever, right? Mm-hmm. I remember going to South by Southwest 10 years ago and talking about one-to-one communication. We haven't still done it, in my opinion, particularly big brands. Like, I think if you look at the smaller brands that are really interesting right now, like Everlane, Away, Glossier, these guys have got to a point where they really understand their consumers so well that they can have very intimate relationships with them. I just don't think big brands have achieved this yet. And I still think that there is value. And now with the introduction of AI and the introduction of all this amazing technology, I still think there's a balance there. And so for me, you know, I'm so adamant to go into a company and try and really figure out both the one-to-one communication, but then creating these big moments. Mm-hmm. I think I would like to find that balance there. And I'm not saying that that's the future of marketing. Mm-hmm. I think within that, you've got this incredible balance of winning big moments in time with very intimate moments. And mm-hmm. that mix for me is very important.
So incredibly interesting. And you had brought up Jonathan Mildenhall before. Mm-hmm. And great guy. Can't wait for him to be on the show too. But I remember us having a conversation, was maybe a year ago. And we were talking about culture and the culture of a brand and the communication of that brand outside to the consumers, which I agree with you is super important. Yeah. But if internally the culture is radically different than this brand proposition that you're presenting, yeah, it will ultimately fail.
Absolutely.
So how do you think about that and the role of the CMO?
I fundamentally think that, you know, one of the reasons I joined Ford to begin with was because I had a very clear point of view. It was that, and this happens with most companies, is you get to a point where product becomes a commodity. And in my belief, when you're a car company that appeals to the masses, mm-hmm. you now get to a point where your product is a commodity, right? Like the days in which you could sell yourself on price, safety, technology, how green a vehicle was, I think are gone. Because if you buy a brand new car today, chances are that it's going to get you from A to B, mm-hmm. and it's not going to break down, or it's going to be as efficient as it possibly can. And so the difference for you now is minuscule. And so I think car companies for me, and then why I went to Ford was because I was so excited at them becoming a brand that was instilled in values. And the reason you were buying a Ford car was not because it was more green than another car or more fuel efficient than another car, because really the differences are minuscule. But you were buying into that brand because of what it believed in. And I think when you think about the history of a company like that and the heritage and the DNA, there was so much of that that you could bring up. And it really started from within. You're absolutely right. I think everyone who will talk to you now about launching a brand campaign or a brand initiative will tell you that the brand needs to start from within. And that's, in my opinion, is kind of where you start, really, is what is not only the customer's perception of your brand, but your employees' perception of the brand. Right. And if they're thinking it's one thing and you're going out there and telling the world it's another thing, then that's where you have to really start. But the secret for me is lean into what you're already known for, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going into a company tomorrow and they're known for I'm just going to pick a color, but they're known for being a red brand, you can't make them a green brand tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You need to lean into what's good about being a red brand. And I fundamentally think that the people in that company will probably already think something along those lines. You just need to tap into it and lean into what you're already known for.
Right, right. So this is such a big topic. And, on this show, we talk a lot about culture and the role of the CMO, particularly in helping to guide and shape the culture inside the organization. When you were at Ford, and then maybe we'll talk about what you think the future might be on this, but how did you work or did you not work with like HR to really drive internal communications and really continue to drive that brand heritage, if you will?
I think it's a trifecta. We, the brand team worked with the comms team and worked with the HR team to try and bring those three things together. And I think it's one of the first time those three teams had worked so closely together was to try and think about culture. It's interesting because I also think brand and culture are two words where if you ask 10 different people what they mean, you get 10 different answers. And, I think everyone's description or opinion on brand, it differs, and culture differs. Mm-hmm. I say that I was very naive when I went to Ford in terms of what my definition of culture was. Because having worked at places like Burberry, Nike, and Apple, my perception on culture was simple as, hey, if I get along well with you, it's a cultural fit. Mm-hmm. Right, and you laugh. You laugh, but that's all I'd known, right?
Right.
Like the culture at Nike, Apple, and Burberry, surprisingly, is pretty similar. It's an innovative, driven, creative culture, and so I felt like, hey, culture is like if I get along well with you. But I very soon realized that it wasn't just about getting along with people, but it's how you get work done, mm-hmm. and how things operate in that organization, and how you communicate ideas.
Yeah,
that was the big difference. So. Inherently, most people are good, right?
Right.
You can have a culture of good people. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a good fit for you in terms of how you work.
Okay, so very, very interesting because this could go in like five different directions. What would be a culture for you in your next endeavor? What kind of culture are you attracted to?
This turned into an interview, Nadine.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll go back. I've got more questions for you that are not work-related. How about that?
No, I know that what's right for me is to go into a company that wants to lead or is a challenger brand. Like that is part of, I've learned a lot about myself going to Ford. I have zero regrets. I was there for 1 year, right? And that's in this day and age, that's considered, well, you weren't there long enough to do anything. And it's not.
I disagree, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But it's also one of those things where it looks bad in your resume, right, if you've only been there for a year. But I learned more in my year about myself than I had in the past 10 years because I put myself in a very different situation, right? You learn in your uncomfortable moments. And I learned a great deal about myself. I know what's important to me. I care too much. Like the reason you and me are sitting in a studio with the most incredible microphones and audio equipment is because I care about detail. And so when we were talking about your podcast, I was like, listen, I love them, right? You have some of my heroes, Seth, Linda Boff on your podcast, right? People I adore and love. But the sound quality could be better. And here you are, you've totally delivered on that. And hopefully the sound quality is much better. But I care too much about details. So I know that I want to work in an organization that is more creatively led, where people care. And that attention to detail matters. And also, more importantly, you know, working for a CEO who understands marketing, that's really important to me. Because if I have a vision that's going to take a bit of a leap of faith and a risk, I need someone who understands that versus someone I'm having to educate. What's terrible but also really good for me is I'm being quite selfish about it. I'm being very conscious and aware of knowing that I'm going to take some time out. And if I have to become an Uber driver, I'll become an Uber driver until I find the right fit for me. What I've really enjoyed about my time off is I'm spending time with companies and people who inspire me right now. I sat with Emily Wise at Glossier and just listened. I sat with people who were just doing remarkable things. Tomorrow, I'm going to sit with a guy called Tom McLeod, who runs Omni, which is a company based here in San Francisco, because he's doing amazing things in like the rentals and storage space. Mm-hmm. And I just find that this is such an exciting time where you can reach out to people, where you can connect with people in a way that you've never been able to connect before and learn. Mm-hmm. It was one of my biggest pet peeves is having people on my team who used to be like, well, but my manager's not teaching me, or I'm not being coached. And I'm like, well, you know, I watch a TED Talk every week of my life, right? Mm-hmm. It's 4 minutes of my life every week. But without fail, I'm educated, right? And I'm spending time and reaching out to people who are far more smarter than me to learn as well. And I think you can do that. Like, that's what makes this world so exciting. Like, go onto any YouTube page and there's every interview with every single person in the world, some of the smartest people in the world talking about what's important to them.
Yeah, well, so I'm interviewing one of the most important people in the world right now who's talking about what's important to them. Well, you're, I mean, and my guests, I'm so fortunate to say they are celebrities of marketing.
They are, yeah.
You've achieved some amazing things in your career. What pivotal moments did you have along the way where you were like, I'm going over here, or wow, that really made an impact in my life?
So let me take you back a bit. I, born and raised in London, as you can tell from the accent.
I'm trying so hard not to mimic you.
It's an unfair advantage because it makes you sound smarter than you actually are. And by the way, you can share bad news with people and it's not as bad. So.
Yeah, and you can insult people really creatively
really well.
And they have no idea.
No one's offended. In fact, it's why my wife married me, I think. You know, I'm born and raised in London. I was adamant on becoming a banker. And the simple equation there was I wanted to drive fast cars. And as a 14-year-old kid, bankers made a lot of money and therefore I'd be able to buy lots of fast cars. And, you know, that was my thing. And I sold flowers. I sold fake IDs. I was the entrepreneur on the playground.
You might get arrested after this. I just want
to... Yeah, that's fine. I'm willing to take that risk. But it was part of who I was, right? I didn't do anything other than sell fake IDs, which is illegal. But I was adamant on just doing that. And I didn't come from a wealthy background, so I needed to earn money somehow. And I got to university and I somehow worked my way up to London School of Economics. And I promise you, I'm not academically very smart. So I had to work twice as hard as someone else. And during that time there, I lost both my parents.
Oh.
So my father passed away at the beginning of the year, my mother passed away towards the end of the year. And it was the most pivotal moment in my life, because when you've been through tragedy, you kind of self-reflect on yourself in a way that no one else has. And to have both my parents pass away at one time gave me this moment of reflection that, you know, I look back and thank God for, because it gave me this moment to think about like the world in a very different way in terms of how precious life was. And that's such a pivotal moment, right? University, when you're deciding what you're doing for the rest of your life. And I went to a talk and Martin Sorrell was speaking. And at the very end, I raised my hand and said, you know, Sir Martin, do you have any advice for someone who's a bit lost in life? And he said, do something you love in life and you'll do well in it.
Okay, wow. So I'm going to ask you a very strange question.
Go for it.
Okay. If you could look back to when you were a kid and give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be?
That's a very good question. So it's damn, it's not your regular question.
Oh, see, I had to throw you a curveball.
Piece of advice. Oh, Nadine, why is this so hard? I think I could give myself a million pieces of advice. I mean, listen, there's one side of me which is incredibly satisfied with what I have achieved in life. You know, I'm still young and I've had incredible career roles. And I think I've learned something along the way in every single role I've had and every single moment I've had. So there's way too many things that I've learned. In fact, the good thing is that I've learned by doing and getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly versus someone telling me something, right? It's always, I've done something wrong and then someone's gone, all right, Musa, well, you did this wrong, or, you know, you should think about this. So I've continued to learn by doing,
mm-hmm.
which is important. And I think that there are moments where I haven't had as much courage and conviction as I would like. And I wish I had trusted my gut and my instinct more. And I think that that's where I would have, well, that's the advice I'd give myself, is like, really trust and believe in your gut and intuition and then fight for it. Because I think when you're trying to convince people of change or you're trying to inflict change, it's not easy. Like it's easy to tell people what they already know and to guide them in a direction that they're already kind of suited in. It's very difficult to change people's minds and opinions. And so if you fail the first time, don't give up. And I wish there's moments in my life where I wish I hadn't given up.
Wow. Okay. Solid advice. And man, I feel the same way. So now for my usual question.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to start mixing this up more if I now have a usual question. But there is one I always like to ask at the end of the podcast. And I can see you nodding already. So you got it. You got it covered.
To be honest, I knew the answer to this question before you asked it. But
oh, okay. So what's your favorite color?
I only wear navy blue, but I will answer that question. Like,
yeah,
you're joking.
You are top to toe
navy blue.
Always.
Uniform every single day of my life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay, so that's your brand.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was really my question, but that explains the navy blue. Okay, if you were not, because this is kind of funny because I can't even phrase it this way anymore because you aren't actually doing what you were doing and now you're doing all kinds of other things. What's your dream? Won't even call it a job. What is your passion? What would you be doing if money were no object?
I want to redevelop education.
Amen.
Particularly for right-brained individuals.
Yes.
So it's a well-known fact that the education system is built for those people with left brains, right? It's very,
mm-hmm.
remember this, remember that. It's pretty analytical, particularly in the UK. And I know so many people who are so incredibly smart who have gone on to do some remarkable things, who all struggled at school. And it was because they were being inspired or told to learn in a way that's not right for them. Like, I was terrible at school. I was really, really bad. And I had to work twice as hard as everyone else. But if school was more creative or more interesting in that sense, I would have done really, really well. And I think there's so many kids today who are prescribed with things like ADHD, who are, like, you put a piece of paper and a coloring pen in front of them and they are focused, as you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
Or a camera or a piece of technology, and they're focused. So they're not struggling from ADHD. They're just not inspired. And so I would really love to think about rethinking education so that people who struggle in the current system can be inspired to learn it in a different way. And I think that that for me is like the ultimate mission for me, and something I will try and tackle at some point.
Okay.
But it's something that's really important to me.
Well, that point might be tomorrow because I need to enroll you. Seriously.
Right.
All right. Well, cool. So thank you so much for joining me for my inaugural professional studio recording with hopefully amazing audio.
It's been amazing. Can I take a minute just to thank you as well? Like, going through this process, I've just had to spend a lot of time on planes, spend a lot of time doing nothing, and I've literally listened to every single one of your podcasts. And Seth was on the first one, right?
Right.
And I was like, wow. First of all, he's a living legend. But second of all, I was like, this is so good. No one's going to be able to beat this. And yet it's just been great person after great person. And like, everyone is dropping such incredible knowledge that it's inspired me. It's taught me so much. And like, I'm so grateful that it's now out there, because I think this is, I'm speaking to every single agency person I'm speaking to. It's like, hey, everyone in your agency needs to listen to all of these.
Oh.
Everyone at your brand needs to listen to all of these because they're just full of incredible insight and knowledge. And I'm so happy that young people have the opportunity to be able to listen to people as amazing as the ones you've had on your show. And I'm always flattered when I'm on anything that's the same as Linda Boff, because she's my my life hero. It's a real honor to be here. So thank you very much.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. That means the world to me, makes it all worth it. And I am so happy that I have been able to share wonderful stories like yours. I'm just the vehicle. So thank you for bringing all your great wisdom.
That's awesome.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.